Coach Don in here with us. Forgot to get your game notes. I'll get them at the next commercial.
Hey, I'm ready. I'm ready.
How are you, Coach? Good to see you.
Doing good. Glad to be with you guys and understand what a big year it's going to be for the Dogs. I mean, you look at our schedule now, it's gotten a little bit tougher than what I thought it was going to be back in the middle of August. But watch the Kentucky Wildcats the other night. I mean,
are they legit, Coach?
You know, compared to what they've been in the past, yeah. I mean, defensively, really good against the run. Got, you know, good running offense, and then their quarterback. You know, the year of the transfer is just so prevalent in college football. When you just look around the country, how many teams wouldn't be where they are right now without a transfer quarterback? Let's just go over a couple real quick, like Will Grier at West Virginia, Joe Burrow at down there at LSU. This Wilson kid was at Oregon and went to a JUCO and now transferred there. I mean, over and over, all around the country.
Do you put Blake Barnett in that category?
Well, Blake's doing a good job. South Florida's undefeated. So, you know, there's about 15 of them playing right. That Minshew kid from East Carolina is playing at Washington State. They're 4-1. I think it's Minshew or something like that.
Yeah.
And just over and over, just really good job. And Shea Patterson at Michigan. I mean, you're going to see Kelly Bryant go somewhere. I mean, he's going to leave there at Clemson and go play for somebody next year and maybe turn them around. So, but getting back to the one thing that I wanted to mention today, I usually don't stay up and watch the second half of the game because I don't see how you guys get in here at 6 o'clock. I got to get in here at 8. But
I don't see much Monday Night Football.
I'm just telling
you
right now that Mahomes kid – unless he gets hurt, it's pretty scary, the talent of that guy. And he's surrounded by some great players. I mean, you know, if you just look at their offensive line, Fisher was drafted in the first round, one of the first guys taken out of Central Michigan. The Swartz guy at right tackle hasn't given up a sack to Von Miller, who's the best pass rusher anywhere in three games now. And, you know, they got that – Hill, who's just a human speed merchant, and then their tight end is outstanding. And then, hey, how about
Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, how about Hunt coming in there from Toledo? And then Conley from Georgia is going, you know, he makes a lot of big plays for him. He's really good blocking on the perimeter. And really, last night they got Sammy Watkins hurt and didn't even play. Who's really, we know what he did at Clemson. He's a great receiver. So it's just, but we're here to talk college ball. But I had to tell you, though, when I saw that guy throw the ball left-handed last night, it reminded me of just one quick story. We played Kansas in the game of the week for ABC, and Kansas was really bad then, and they just didn't have any other games. And we had a kid that was our a baseball player, first baseman, that was really good. Left-handed guy, and so Switzer told our baseball coach he'd give him a football scholarship if he'd let him come out there and throw pass skeleton for us 3 days a week because we needed to – we never threw the ball. We need somebody to get some juice on it. So his name was Glenn Sullivan. We call him Sully. So the players talked Switzer into letting him go on a trip. So he went to the Kansas game, you know, so he was up there and he didn't know any plays. He knew the other team's plays, of course, but he didn't know any of ours. And we're really up, really unbelievably winning. So we put him in there just running out the clock. And then we got like to a third down. And you got to remember, we're on the left hash mark, which, you know, everything to the field's right. So we called a pass. So he faked to the right and then rolled out to the right, and then he got pulled up, and then he went back to his left and just threw a ball left-handed right there to the in the flat, which, you know, routine play for Sully. But Keith Jackson was doing the game, you know, for ABC, Keith Jackson and Frank Broyles. And I can't really do Keith Jackson like I used to, but he says, "Whoa, Nelly, look at that athlete that they got for the Oklahoma Sooners. He threw that ball left-handed." He actually thought that Sully was right in the guy and threw it left-handed. So Sully went back home, and everybody was just eating him up with a lot of good stuff there. But this Mahomes guy, wow. Man, I just –
Did you see it coming?
Well, athletically, you know, I don't know if any of you guys remember
it.
Sam can look it up, but they played a game against Oklahoma like 2 or 3 years ago where the Oklahoma beat him like 66 to 60 in regulation.
I remember
he threw
that.
For like 600 yards in both those backs for OU got a lot of yards rushing, you know, the one's playing for Cincinnati and the other kid. But I just noticed in that game, I mean, Oklahoma was rushing him all over the field and he was throwing it, but that's the first time I'd ever seen him. And so many yards he got in that game.
All right, Mahomes was, oh, my God, he threw for 734 yards.
Against Oklahoma.
Yes.
So that gets your attention.
Five touchdowns and one pick. Baker Mayfield in that game, 545 yards, 7 passing touchdowns.
Well, what about the two backs? How many yards did they get?
Mixon had 263. The next highest guy had 22.
What's his name? Perrine didn't play in the game.
No, Perrine didn't play. Perrine.
But seriously, I mean, that was the kind of game that gets your attention there.
Yeah,
but,
66 always, to 59.
But the guy's always had Cliff Kingsbury's always had good quarterbacks. I mean, you know, you look at over the guys that he's had over the years, starting with Johnny Football. He was his offensive coordinator there at A&M, and then you know, you look back over the years, Texas A&M had Kingsbury, had Graham Harrell. I mean,
you want to know how many times Mahomes threw the ball in this game?
88.
Wow. So did they even have a rushing attempt?
That was a regulation game, too. It wasn't even overtime.
Each team scored double-digit points in every quarter.
Yeah.
And let's see, Mahomes also had 12 carries for 85 yards. Their running back, DeLeon Ward, carried it 7 times for 31.
Man.
Well, this is a Georgia show, but I'm just telling you about it.
I love looking at that
stuff. I love
to
see quarterbacks with that athleticism, though, because if you just look in the NFL, with the exception of Brady and a couple other guys, you've got to be able to move your feet, man. You've got to be able to get around and get rid of the football. And it's pretty evident in college football, too.
Former Georgia head coach Jim Donnan, also College Football Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I was just going to say before he moved on to Georgia real quick, I just wanted to say because the Texas Tech quarterback, as you were talking about there, is usually one that doesn't play like in the NFL. You know,
he's a system guy.
Right, and they don't have that. So what did Andy Reid necessarily, you know, identify as, hey, Texas Tech
Mahomes
might be a system guy, but this
NFL
guy can go.
And they traded up to get him.
Yeah.
So what I understand is the general manager, who's a younger guy that Andy has brought along over the years, he started out like as a scout for him over at Philadelphia, just watched the kid practice and everything and just kept bringing the tape in. And the one thing about Andy Reid that is pretty much different than some pro coaches, he has one coach on his staff that all he does is study college film. And every Saturday he watches all these college games and gets the tape in and studies for things that they could maybe use in the pros, you know, and then gives it to them during the week. So they were running RPOs a long time before anybody. That's where, you know, his lieutenant who took over the job for the Philadelphia Eagles was his offensive coordinator there, and so that's where we saw the Eagles running all that stuff the last couple of years. So Andy's always been on the cutting edge, and I don't know if I told you the story. I'm getting old, but when I was a coach at Oklahoma and Andy was a coach at Missouri, we went up to watch a Chiefs practice one day, and just so happened, I didn't meet him up there. But college coaches around there visiting, you know, and he just happened to be standing out there. And he's kind of a, you know, burly guy, but nice guy. And we're just talking back and forth. And he was asking me about my goals and everything and what I wanted to do. And, you know, I said, well, hey, I'd like to be a head coach. He said, you know what? One day one of us might even be the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Nice.
I said, well. So when he got that job, I sent him a text, and he remembered it, but that wasn't the reason. But it was pretty funny that this guy would talk about that in 1988.
And here we are, 30 years later.
The head coach of the Kansas City.
The head coach of the Chiefs. Well, Coach, let's look a little bit back towards the Tennessee game, and what were your thoughts on Georgia's win?
You know, I was very much impressed. I'm always look at all the positives before I – start nitpicking, but I was impressed that we did what we had to do against a team we were supposed to beat. Anytime you hear all week that you're a 31-point favorite, and these kids hear that. I mean, they're walking around campus. They're listening to all these people talk about it, and it's hard, and they watch the tape. I mean, it's hard to get yourself ready to go. I mean, you can, but at the same time, it's not like a bigger game that they're going to see as far as the intensity of the moment. But I thought really came out well prepared and did a good job defensively. The first play, they kind of caught us off guard, but, you know, really put the squelch on them. I continue to be a little bit concerned about our inability to do a whole lot in the first half in the conference games on offense. You know, we just haven't been able to put it together like we did in the second half in all three conference games. But that was one thing that bothered me a little bit. I thought, too, that we tackled really good in space, didn't give them anything easy. And then offensively, you know, we were able to get a little spark there when Fields came in and made some good plays. And then, you know, we didn't get quite as many big plays in the passing game as normal. A little bit worried about the pass protection, but I've said all along that that's not really one of our strengths. But you got to remember, too, that we continue to play two freshmen on the right side of our offensive line. And, you know, this is their fifth game they've ever played. So that'll continue to improve. But overall, it was a good, solid win. And look forward to playing the Commodores this week.
On a talent level, now having seen Tennessee play in person, where do you put them? They just don't have one guy that just sticks out.
At number eight, that back is going to be a good player. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to, you know, have a shot to really keep going. And then they got some pretty good guys on defense. I thought their secondary covered pretty well. And, you know, up front, they're okay on defense, but pretty well-coached team. But, you know, they made some silly mistakes with their kicking game. I don't think I've ever seen a team punt three times in a row like that with an unbalanced line. I don't know what they're trying to get out of that, but didn't have enough men on the line. But their talent level's down. That's why they lost, 11 straight conference games now.
Yeah, and I don't got see Auburn and Alabama coming
up. I don't see them winning anytime soon, but they'll have a shot. To me, they'll have a shot against South Carolina, you know, particularly if Bentley's out. Who knows how bad he's going to be. And then you got they'll have a shot against Vanderbilt and Missouri. They got Charlotte. I mean, I think they could win five or six games.
Well, Coach, would you have been surprised if someone had told you that Tennessee would actually have more rushing attempts? Not rushing attempts, but they would actually have – you know, 25 rushing attempts. They didn't have more than Georgia did, but
not really. We talked about it on Bulldog Friday night. I thought one of their plans was, you know, shorten the game and try to run some clock,
they looked like they tried to do in the first half.
They really did keep the game close enough where they got a break there and then got a couple scores there and made it 24-12. So, you know, it looked like going into fourth quarter that they, you know, that worked for them. And then I thought those were two really good drives. Well, one, we got a turnover there, but, you know, just the fact we were able to win the game still on the line, be able to make the plays to take it down the field and crunch them. And then Harrion came in and made some good runs along with some good plays by Fields and Fromm.
Coach, one of my friends had said something to me about Georgia's offense that kind of intrigued me. It's not really anything I've necessarily paid all that much attention to. There's a lot of talk about the tight ends, obviously, and maybe not targeting them as much. We saw, the only way Nada got the ball on a Saturday was when he recovered.
That's a well-designed play.
Oh, yeah. Totally, 100%.
So whiff on a block, then go back and get the fumble, and then run it in for a touchdown.
Showed a lot of athleticism, though, the way he picked it up and ran with it.
That was good.
But what I was getting at was the fact that it seems like Georgia just doesn't – when Jake Fromm's in at quarterback, and we haven't really seen Justin Fields in, you know, all that much in these long throwing situations, so we can't really speak to it. But when Fromm's in, he doesn't target the middle of the field maybe as much, and he tends to stay on these outside routes or these outs. Is that something where it's just that's his comfort, or is it something where maybe that's something Georgia needs to work on in terms of targeting the middle of the field more?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly, but if you look at his over the last year and a half, he does throw the ball to the outside a whole lot more than he does the inside. But part of that's that we run these RPOs, run pass options, where we tag a run with the pass. And when you do that, it's usually an outside route because the fact that, you know, you've called a run and it looks like they got the run stopped. So we usually tag it with either a hitch or an out or a fade or a back shoulder. So, and the back shoulder is basically based on where the defender is when he gets ready to throw the ball. If he's head-to-head with him, he's going to go on and throw it over his head. But if he's, you know, ahead of the offensive guy, he's going to throw the back shoulder. But I don't really know enough about what they're trying to do as far as placement on the field. But I do know we got a lot of tight end routes. And as I said before, when teams are ganged up to stop the run, it's harder to throw the tight end, particularly when they're playing man coverage, because they're on the tight ends pretty quickly. But when they're in zone, that's when those things open up. So we'll see. But, you know, but the one thing that I would negate to anybody that is likely to start making an argument, well, the defense is just going to really key on Fields when he goes in there because he knows all he does is run. I'm just going to tell you right now, we haven't seen a guy since Stafford here that has an arm like this guy. Now, Eason does. Eason had one, but this guy is comparable there with his arm strength. But he's a lot more accurate than Eason, so I wouldn't worry about that. I hope some people think that he can't throw because they're going to get their pants pulled down in front of a lot of people. So I mean,
not Mike Singletary? Huh?
anybody starts talking about that, really, you need to not you know, don't worry about that part. But and I think Fromm's mobility is better than people are saying too. He just got caught up in some tough deals where we got, you know, that got some pretty good pass rush on us. But overall, you know, it's a good situation from a standpoint. You got two guys that are still young quarterbacks that are growing, and they both got ability and can provide a different spark. And we didn't lose any kind of momentum with the shift that we put in there the other day. I think it helped us both ways. So I'm not concerned about that.
Dogs end up winning by 26, and you think, well, that line was about 30, so it was close to that, although Tennessee did a good job of at least keeping it close, although you never really got the feeling that they were going
right
to win the game.
I thought at 24-0 that things were getting ready to open up the floodgates, but we weren't able to do it. How about my boy Doug Marone going for two against the
good for him
against the Jets at the end of the game, 25 seconds to go?
Yeah. They need to be playing overtime.
Well, I mean, they were up. What was the score when he hit them?
Oh, yeah, they were thumping them.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of a different game.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you're right. So he was rubbing that in?
I don't know. He said he was just going by the chart. But But I do know that he
– didn't the Jets tell him they were just going by the chart when they didn't hire him?
I know this. He turned out he had a job with the of course, everybody knows he coached for me, and he had a job with the Buffalo Bills. But his contract said if they changed ownership,
yeah, he could get out,
and they'd have to pay him the rest of his contract. Well, he did that with the idea, and his agent Jimmy Sexton thought that he was going to get the Jets job, and he had the general manager on his side, but the president Johnson guy, the guy that owns Johnson & Johnson,
Woody Johnson.
Put the squelch on it. So I don't know if Doug had a little burr in his saddle or not, but that's pretty funny going for two up. What was the score in that?
Well, I would assume that this was not something that had to do with the chart, because that ended up putting them up 19.
With 25 seconds.
Yeah, left. So, I mean, what's the difference in being up 18 or 19? You know, I don't think really a whole lot.
But they didn't make it, though, did they?
Oh, okay, so that's right, they didn't get it. So that would have put them up 21. So then that makes sense.
Well, we had that situation last year against Missouri. We were up in the second half, and we went for two, and Odom looked over at us. But the chart said we should have gone for
two. So, yeah, I mean, the chart in that season, it would have put you up 21. I mean, granted, there was only 25 seconds left in the game.
And in this game the other day, we should have gone for two. At the end, when we were up 26, you know, 20, we should have gone for two.
Yeah, when does, you know, everybody talks about the chart, but at what point do you start worrying about the chart?
Just depending on how the other team's playing and how you're playing, you know, will it take two scores to beat you, or you know, will this if you're up five, you know, hey, let's go at the end of the game, let's make it seven instead of six, you know, where they score and get a touchdown, or you know, all those things are involved. And
the Steelers were down 14-12 at the end of the first half, and they scored, and then they went for two.
Steelers go for two all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gone for it more than anybody in football, and they love to do it.
You know, I think Coach Chaney chased an extra point against you, right? And it ended up costing him a game because
they missed a field goal.
Yeah.
He knew that he was going to be here. We talked about it for the game, and I said, "Hey, just make sure when you know when you get to be the offensive coordinator at Georgia, like in 20 years, this is going to be something all the Georgia fans appreciate."
I know, and it was like, I was like, okay, that was Drew Brees. They had an early they kept chasing it, and
I never will forget after that game. We had the press conference, and you have to go to the press conference, win or lose in a bowl game. It's all set up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew Brees was in there with their coach, and Drew Brees, you know, all week the guy was just so nice, you know, talking to everybody. He was literally chapped, man, at their defense. Now he was mad, and he wasn't really saying a lot on the. Up on the podium, but he, you know, they had a shot to really put us away, but they didn't do anything on offense in the second half either.
Nope.
We came back, but
at the time it was the largest comeback in bowl history.
Yeah, and one of my best halftime declarations ever. I just told our defense, I don't care what the game plan was or what it is, we're going to drop eight and rush three and make him throw it in front of us, and that's every one of the calls. We don't even need a signal. We're going to drop.
Well, that's why they didn't do anything in the second half, right?
We just made them throw it in front of us because we were trying to play man under on those guys, and they were just destroying us.
Drew Brees, who would have known at the time he was going to be a Hall of Famer.
But I don't think I've ever told this story on the air either. But, you know, really, the rest of my life, I'll go to my grave, we should have kicked the field goal against that year against – Tech when Jasper fumbled before that, there's no question about it, but we had missed one the week before. But the irony of it was at the end of the game when we went to overtime, the first play of overtime, Patrick Pass ran the ball down to the 3-yard line on a play, and Randy McMichael came over to me and grabbed me and said, "Let's kick that SOB right now, coach." So he was right, boy. We didn't mess it around. We kicked it right then.
That's good stuff. Coach Donnan here.
Is that bad to say that on the air?
SOB?
Yeah.
No, did I just say it?
No, it's okay.
That's all good.
He said. It was pretty good, though. I mean, it was pretty saying at the time because, hey, we had a lot of hurt for a month, and all of us had a hurt for 20 years after that. But it wasn't any question. We were kicking it right away, that's for sure.
Coach Donnan here in the studio with us.
All right, 8:34 back here on the morning show. We are presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. Sam Franco, David Johnston, and Coach Donnan along with you here. You can call us at 706-549-6000 or email 960theref@coxradio.com. All right, Coach, Vanderbilt coming in, homecoming weekend. I've always wanted to ask a coach this. What does the team itself make of, like, homecoming? It just seems like a bunch of extra fanfare that, for most coaches, would, like, interfere with their normal
process. You know, the one thing you try to always do on Sunday when you meet with the team, or Monday if Sunday's your day off, is you kind of set the standard for the week and talk about what you have to do. And you know, everybody just looks at their part of the game sometime. You know, the defense is looking at the other team's offense, and your offense is looking at the defense. But you need to have everybody understand what we got to do as a team to win. But you also talk about the importance of a home game or a road game. What all you're going to do as far as the itinerary, but just bring up it's going to be a little bit different atmosphere with so many people coming back that might be the only time they see your team play this year, or it might be the only time you see some of your old friends coming back. So it's an important part of the folklore of any school, to play a homecoming game. And I always liked it wherever I was because you got a chance to see some of your old players that maybe don't come as much, or some of your friends. So it's just a little bit different from that standpoint, because everybody knows that there's going to be maybe more people that you normally don't see around the football office, around practice and stuff like that.
I guess, too, though, for schools like Georgia or Alabama or Clemson, when you've got everybody coming every weekend anyway, it's not quite as –
Right, right. When you got a lesser team and where you maybe have – but you always have such a big group – of followers here for our team. And I noticed yesterday, I read where they listed the top 25 stadiums in the country, and they listed ours as number 2, which I thought was awesome. Clemson was listed as number 1, but I didn't get far after looking at us being number 2. But if you're in the top 5 stadiums in the country as far as atmospheres, that means a lot from the standpoint of what other people might think about it. Now, there's going to be different ratings and talk about different places like that, but it's always good to have your fan base, loyal guys that are loyal people going to be with you, win or lose. But now we created such a monster around here, you got to feed it. You just can't lose a game. That's the way it was at Oklahoma.
I bet you guys, if y'all only won a game by 2 or 3 touchdowns and y'all were favored by 4 or 5, the fans were, upset.
Hey, we never had people leave the game because they wanted to see how the spread was going to finish up. But, we had this guy named McBride that intercepted a pass against Kansas after Donnie Mahoney had fumbled on the goal line, and we weren't going to make the spread. And then inexplicably, they threw the ball in the flat, and this McBride kid intercepted it and ran in the end zone. And he's forever etched in the minds of all those gamblers because we hit the spread of 56 with that interception or something.
The pick 6 to win by 56, yep. And cover the spread.
It was...
That is the reason some people stick
around. You got to remember, though,
around back
then, there were so many bad teams in our league. Beside Nebraska, Colorado started getting better, and Oklahoma State was okay. But we had some games where we were scoring in the 70s. It was hard to keep the score down. You just couldn't.
Well, Coach Saban had that on Saturday where he's up 49-0 at halftime and only wins 56-14. So I'm just assuming, because I haven't seen him, they literally they have to shut it down. They could have scored 100 points.
Right. And they, what kind of group is that when you put in Jalen Hurts, who's 26-2 as a starter, as your backup quarterback?
Yeah.
And you tell him, hey, don't do anything really funky out there, but it's hard not to. And they got 4 backs that, it's the same thing here. It's hard to keep the score down against a lesser team.
Coach Donnan here in the studio with us.
Coach, you talk about that and kind of dialing it back. We know that Georgia is a better team than Tennessee. We know that they're a better team than Vanderbilt. But, there's a difference in, I guess, Alabama dialing it back and like a Georgia dialing it back. And I don't think you're at a point right now for Georgia just because of maybe some lack of consistency or influidity on offense where you could – shut it down or dial it back for anyone.
I think Kirby's done a really good job of talking to the team and to the people through the press about this team has got everything ahead of it and probably is maybe ranked higher. He didn't say this, but I'd say we're ranked maybe higher based on last year than what we really are at this point, although I think our ceiling is out the roof there. I think we can really go and get a lot better, but people don't want to hear that. They want to see. But you see those 2 backs that we lost both got over 100 yards Sunday in the pros. A left tackle drafted in the first round, a guy like Roquan, and then Carter up there. it's just hard to replace guys and just, you know, make it look like that overnight. But the one overriding thing that'll be very saying around our program this year, this week, is the fact that 2 years ago we were a prohibitive favorite against Vanderbilt. No way we could lose to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, what are you talking about? Well, we give up over 200 yards in the kicking game. Just looked like everything that could go wrong in the kicking game. We stepped out of bounds on the one. They returned the kickoff to the 5 yard line. Time after time, the ball bounced on punts, and you know they got field position. And before you know it, you get to the end of the game, and they got one or two plays to win it, and they made them, and we didn't. So that's etched in everybody's mind. I mean, that was a tough loss for Kirby in his first year and for the players, and really lost a lot of confidence right there. And we really kind of were in a funk after that game. So, you know, you don't really refer to many situations, but you can say, look, this team right here went into a very hostile environment where we played last year, Notre Dame. You guys were there, and they almost beat Notre Dame, which right now, unless Notre Dame steps on its toes, they're going to be in the playoffs mm-hmm. because that's the way they set it up. I mean, I don't think they're a top five or six team based on what I've seen, but their schedule is just, if they don't lose to Virginia Tech this week, I don't know who's going to beat them. I mean, I think they're going to run the table. You know, it'll look like a tougher schedule when the season started, but Florida State, come on. They got beating Stanford last week really helped them. So, but what I'm saying is this team really should have beaten Notre Dame, but then last week they played against a team that I don't know if Tennessee State gives scholarships or just uses Pell Grants, but, you know, a very limited scholarship team, and they very
that's the weird thing.
Almost didn't beat them. But they beat Middle Tennessee very handily the first game, you know. So I think you just – answering your question, I'm kind of hemming and hawing here, but you got to – what we got to do is play to our standards and not worry about what Vanderbilt's going to do. They got a good quarterback. I mean, the guy can throw. If they can protect, he's going to get some shots on you. But I just look for our offense to really put it together maybe and get going this week.
Well, you know, what Vanderbilt had 2 years ago when they were here – Georgia had last year. Georgia had Roquan Smith in the season he had 2 years ago. That Zach Cunningham had that kind of season.
Big
there
time
for
linebacker.
Andy.
Big
yeah.
time.
And he made that play on McKenzie to seal the game.
Yeah, this really scary, the inside-out play that he made on that. But, hey, that's water under the
yeah,
bridge or
I'm
over
just saying,
the bridge. But it's still
– have a Zach Cunningham, thank goodness.
It's a situation here where we got to build – confidence going into this LSU game, and you don't want to look ahead, but you know, you're looking at a guy. And the one thing I might say about Joe Burrow, I was listening to you guys on the way in talking about, can he really do it in the clutch? I mean, I really thought he did against Auburn on that last drive
yeah.
when they had to get a field goal, and he took him down and hit two fourth down plays on that to get them in a position against a very good Auburn defense. Probably be the best defense we play against this year until the championship game if we get in it. So I think Burrow is a good player. But I just believe that Kirby's doing a really good job of practice-wise making our team compete against each other and understand how much you got to improve to do your job against the caliber of player you're playing against in practice, because usually so far we haven't played against anybody as good as the team they're practicing against, you know, the first five games.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going against really good comp in practice.
You know, talking about transfer quarterbacks and what a week it was for Clemson last week with the transfer situation there with Bryant and then Lawrence getting hurt in the game. Holy cow. And then for Bryce to come in there and they get the come from behind win, that's as nutty a week as you can just about have, isn't it, Coach?
Yeah, I heard a lot of good things about Bryce from the standpoint, I think is I think this is true, and it's got to be for everybody to talk about. You know, he went to Grayson, but then he came over to North Oconee
yeah.
and finished up before he went to Clemson, and everybody said he's just a really good kid, you know, just down to earth, and he prepared hard and was ready for his opportunity and, you know, came out of the bullpen and made some good plays. But I thought the leadership on Clemson's team was very evident in the fact that, hey, we can't afford in today's way the football's set up now, we can't afford another loss like last year, because it's going to be hard to get in with one loss with all these undefeated teams. So their defense stepped up and made enough plays, and I thought, you know, Syracuse really played it tight there once Lawrence went out. They lost a little bit of their wide-open style, you know, and didn't take as many chances, although they did on that fourth down pass, and the lineman was down the field, but that was a good call. But
you know, some teams just – for whatever reason, just seem to have other teams' numbers or just play really well against. And maybe that's how it is with Clemson and Syracuse.
Well, Clemson's got some issues on the back end. I mean, everybody, you know, talks about their front, which their front is really good. But when you've got a team that throws the ball on rhythm and doesn't rely a whole lot on pass protection but throws these RPOs and just gets rid of the ball quick, it's hard to rush the passer. And, you know, they brought in that Baylor approach. When you watch Syracuse, they spread you way out. I mean, it used to be when you would take a wide receiver and deploy the guy outside the numbers, usually it's because you were going to just run the ball and you wanted the defense to spread out a little bit, because it's hard to throw the ball that far in the air, even to the flat, much less down the field, when you look at the horizontal throw and the vertical throw combined. But that's the one thing that Baylor turned football around with, the Art Briles. Mm-hmm. Started that wide splits with the receivers and then doing the RPOs where they're reading the safety instead of the linebacker. So, you know, when you read the linebacker, you throw the slant or the, you know, in behind them. But when you got to reading the safety, if that safety's low, they're going the ball deep. And they throw an inordinate amount of deep balls and just hope they can hit a few of them.
Coach Donnan here in the studio with us as we are moving right along. We'll do email questions and we'll take a look around the country in the second hour. All right, it's 8:51. It's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. David Johnston, Sam Franco, and former Georgia head coach Jim Donnan along with you. We take our trip around the SEC, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It's the official drink of Fansville. I go Diet Dr. Pepper. Sam goes Cherry Dr. Pepper.
And, hey, regular Dr. Pepper is also very good.
And when we're at Bulldog Friday night, Coach goes straight Dr. Pepper.
I always say I want a Dr. Pepper to go down my throat.
I love it. Well, we will take that trip around the SEC for sure in the second hour. But as we look back just a little bit, Coach, from last week, LSU got the easy win over Ole Miss. Auburn struggled. Now they had a lightning delay that just kind of messed up the tempo and all that stuff. But they were finally able to put away Southern Miss later on. But the two interesting games were Kentucky doing what they did to South Carolina, and now we've seen Mississippi State score 7-6 in their last two games, and they lose to Florida. What's your take on Mississippi State?
Well, first of all, I forgot to mention Jarrett Stidham as a very big-time transfer quarterback, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Turned the fortunes around for Auburn's offense. But certainly that game, Mississippi State was on after our game, and he kind of flipping around, getting ready for the Ohio State game. And I was just really surprised how many drops they had during the course of the game and their inability for Fitzgerald to run the ball very good. And then their passing game was negated. They've had two straight, you know, no-hitters, so to speak, and against Kentucky and against Florida, where they've been, you know, just not been able to be very efficient offensively. I mean, you hold Florida to that few points, you ought to win at home. But they just really, you know, people are asking, what's the deal with them? You know, their quarterback's not a really good down-the-field passer, first of all. And then, you know, I'm sure with Grantham going against these guys, being the D coordinator at a place where he coached last year, he probably knew a whole lot about these players that he tried to scheme, and it worked too. So Mississippi State's a big disappointment at this point with 17 starters back You know, I still think Moorhead's a good coach. I mean, he laid the foundation there with Penn State with their offense that they're doing. I'm telling you, that McSorley guy almost beat Ohio State with his legs and arm the other night. He was just outstanding quarterback, just jumping around. And
what about that play like call, though, on fourth down?
Oh, they had two horrendous play calls on fourth down. One in the third quarter where they went for it on fourth and one and tried to fake up and then throw the ball in the flat to the guy, yeah. And it was knocked down. And then that play, after a timeout, too, they called a timeout and then came out there and had all that time to think about it. They thought they were just going to, you know, catch them napping and they were going to be able to hit that gap, you know, with that inside zone. But Greg Schiano, defensive coordinator, showed them a look where it looked like they could run through that C gap, which is between the tackle and the tight end.
Yeah.
And then at the last second, looped the guy out and brought their jack or their, depending on who you call their jack, but their defensive back
right inside
there. That came untouched, and he hits the guy in the backfield. So it's like when you go in a parking lot and you're trying to get a guy to give you a parking place, and you hold up a $50 bill, and he lets you in there, and then you give him a $5. You know, so that's what happened on that play there. They looked like they could give him a $50, but that guy, they showed him one look, and it's a good defensive call. And then, of course, Franklin after the game was – talking about we're great, we just need to learn how to be elite. And it was a big win for Ohio State. I mean,
no question.
They got to run the table. Certainly got Michigan, but they got Michigan at home. And
well, let me ask you one other question, too, about timeouts. Syracuse not using theirs correctly.
At the end of the game like that, you got to use your timeouts to give yourself a shot there. I mean, you don't want to take them home with you. And you always – you need somebody helping you a little bit. I mean, Baber's obviously got to coach the whole game, but, you know, you got to take some timeouts there. That was not very smart.
Yeah, you'd think, is there not somebody saying, Coach, why aren't we calling timeout?
But where's Coach Boeheim when we need him?
No kidding. Somebody to call timeouts there. It just kind of baffles me that these guys getting paid all this money and then, like, little things like that can slip through the cracks. And not to say that it costs them the game. You don't know, but – like you said, they didn't give themselves a chance at the end.
I know. You always want to game management, time management is something that all of us have had mistakes over the years. But you got that's why you got all these people thinking ahead and doing that stuff. We got time management right here. We got to get out right now.
But we'll be back. One more hour to go right here on 960 The Ref.